大丈夫ね、日本語で今日は日本語でいきますから、まあ、あのメールね今差し上げていて、だんだんとはっきりしてきたんですけども、今日もね一通メールをちょっと別の人からもらって、でこれも非常に面白かったんだけど、その人はまあ私はまあ、それこそお二人角張さんと山下さんから先週ねメールもらって、そこではまあちょっと整理するかね、ちょっと彼には分かんないかな、そもそもなぜ仏教を修行するか勉強するか、その問題なんですよね。仏教をなぜ勉強するか、で私がずっといろんなことがちょっとなんか変だなって感じてきたことがずっとあったんだけど、それがどういうことかっていうと、その例えば瞑想なら瞑想でね、メディテーションならメディテーションで、いきなりメディテーションテクニックの話になるんですよ、ね、で今メディテーションテクニックっていうのがたくさんあって、でそのうちのどのテクニックがいいとか、ね、メディテーションメソッド、ね、まあ、テラバかなテラバでもあるし、ね、チベットならチベットでもあるし、禅なら禅でもあるし、ね、でそのメディテーションメソッドのそのテクニックを、ね、いきなり勉強したかったり、テクニックだけをとにかく教えてくれて、そういう風に話になるんですよ。いきなり、ね、わかります？わかんない。多分やろう。わかるけど、Many people ask me just teach me just meditation technique。だけど問題は、そもそも瞑想を何のためにやるのか、そこが全然はっきりしない、見えない。それがずっと私そう感じてたんですけど、っていうのは特に去年ぐらい帰ってきてから、私はまあミャンマーであるメソッド、マッパーメソッドっていうメソッドを4年かけて勉強してきたので、最初まあみんな来る来て私に、いや聞くのはやっぱりパオメソッドとは何かとかね、でパオメソッドの、具体的なやり方とか、でそれ以外のメソッドと比べてパオメソッドはどこがいいのとかね、その話ばっかりなんですよ。でまあ、そういう話もいいんだけども、まあ、そういう話はいくらでもできるんだけども、まあ、あんましたくもないんだけどで結局何がこれおかしいよってねずっと感じていって、でそれ何がおかしいのかなって、ことがねだんだん分かってきて、それはそもそも瞑想をね何のためにやるのかっていうのが見えない。People ask me just meditation method, but I couldn't see why, first of all, people want to do meditation. So, で、この一番大元のとこが、はっきりしてないっていうことを非常に強く感じてきて、で私はもうずっと結局この大元のところをはっきりさせようっていうことしか、まあ、ずっとこの1年間生きてないんだけども、だけどみんなが欲しいのは単なるテクニックなんですよ、メディテーションテクニックで、で 例えばメディテーションテクニックで、例えばサーティックマインドフルネスっていうものをどうやったらキープできるか、How to keep mindfulness って言葉を使う。だけども Why we need mindfulness、ね、なぜマインドフルネスが大事なのか、それが一体どういう文脈でね、It's kind of context、ね、っていうのがはっきりしなかった。ちょっとまた英語でやります。いいですね、いいですね。ちょっと嬉しさにします、I have been asked by many people from last year please give me meditation method because I practiced one kind of meditation method in Myanmar. It's called Pao method. It's my teacher, the left person, Pao Theater, and he has his own meditation method. It's called Pao method. Then, Pao method itself is quite new in Japan. So, and most of the people are practicing different kind of method, which is called Mahashi method. Mahashi method. Mahashi is also another kind, another teacher's name, Mahashi Seato, Master Mahashi. And then people asked me about what's the difference between these two meditation methods, you know, and what is the advantage of this new method, you know, and then about some small detail of techniques, you know, and that kind of things. You know. Then I always felt something's wrong, you know, something's lacking, you know. So, because meditation method, meditation of course very important, but before we start meditation, we have to clearly know first of all why we have to do meditation, why we have to do we have to practice the Dharma itself. So then I have been asking people about this fundamental motivation or fundamental necessity or something like that. So, why did you come here today? That kind of thing, you know. But I was a little surprised. They don't know about why, first of all, they are practicing meditation. They are just interested in just some kind of technique of meditation. Then, yes, if we master some meditation method, yes, we can feel more peace and less irritated, less frustrated, or like that, you know? It's good. But meditation is not just for just a peaceful life, you know, or just for a happy life. Not like that, you know? So at least in fundamental Buddhist context, Buddhas or teachers didn't recommend like such kind of meditation, like meditation for the sake of stress-free life, or that kind of thing. So, but I also noticed not so many meditation teachers are talking about this fundamental purpose. Fundamental purpose, fundamental context, and and they are just talking about immediately about some kind of meditation technique. So I strongly felt we have to clarify the fundamental motivation, fundamental reason of practicing meditation. So then this, as I said, this morning I got mail from one person, and he, because recently we are exchanging some mails about this fundamental motivation of meditation. So then he noticed, there's very slight, subtle gap between me and him, and because he didn't think such a fundamental reason, fundamental motivation of meditation. So, and it's good because I'm asking people to reflect on fundamental reason. Then, in very authentic Buddhist context, what is a fundamental motivation? Then, in any traditions, in Japanese Zen tradition, in Theravada traditions, and in Tibetan tradition, same. If you check like a basic Tibetan text, like the words of Mata Bhutisha, by Patrick Rinpoche, it's so obvious, because Patrick Rinpoche is talking about study, like this. And what he talked at the first, of course, he talked about the attitude about practice, but then he talked about just impermanence. Okay? Impermanence and cause and effect, such and such. And not only Patrick Rinpoche, but all the Tibetan teachers, Dalai Lama or others, everybody is following this step. So first, impermanence. And Zen tradition same, and Theravada tradition of course same. So point is, what is the impermanence? Then, impermanence, of course, Pali word is anicca, anicca. Anicca means, nicca is like eternal. So, anicca means no eternal. So, just constantly changing. So, usually, in like a Buddhist, fundamental Buddhist context, we have to see the reality always anicca, dukkha, anatta. Anicca, dukkha, anatta means anicca is impermanence, dukkha is suffering, and anatta, non-self. So we have to see always this reality as impermanence, suffering, and non-self. So then, as a meditation, we see all this reality, especially myself, this body and mind. We just observe our body and mind as anicca, dukkha, impermanence, suffering, and non-self. Again and again. So, but this impermanence, anicca is not just everything just changing. Today it's hot, and tomorrow maybe it might rain, or of course wind is always constantly changing. And the tree always changing. Not only like that, anicca, but if Buddhist teacher talk about impermanence at the beginning of Buddhist practice, it means only one thing. It's a just our life is completely beautiful. It means we cannot live forever. This kind of things Buddhist teacher is talking about. Okay? So and like any kind of Buddhist teacher talking of this impermanence, because for example, some people asked this, for example, Dzogchen Zenjin, what is he said, okay, someone came to Master Dzogchen and asked like this, I have been practicing for many years, you know, but still I haven't realized truth. Why? And maybe I don't have enough ability, you know, I'm not intelligent enough, or something like that. You know? Then he said, yes, some people are stupid, some people are intelligent, but of course, you know, it's obvious. But in terms of Buddhist practice, that kind of things doesn't make any difference. You know? Intelligence, of course we go to school, yeah, we get some people get a good result, some people cannot. You know? Of course, obviously, our intellectual level, there are some differences. You know? But in terms of when we practice Buddha Dharma, such a difference doesn't make any difference. You know? Why? Because if we have a real aspiration, then intelligence doesn't make any difference. For example, then he said, if really urgent things happen, then usually we do our best. Then at that time, whether we have ability or not, that kind of doesn't make any sense. Like for example, okay, house, the fire, the fire is burning. Then if we have a very important thing like this, of course, I'm very still young woman, you know, but suddenly we can take this house, you know. But usually we can't, I don't have enough power. But now this house is burning, you know, but, and this altar is so important. You know. Then, we can't like this. So, if really urgent things happen, then suddenly we will have a very special power. But this is not special. We still already have such a power, but usually we don't use it. Or we think we don't have it, but really urgent thing happens, then we can even bring this heavy altar, something like that. So that's why what we need is really kind of urgent feeling, and in Pali it's called Sambhega, it's like a someone translates called spiritual urgency. Spiritual urgency. I think it's very good translation. I think it's good to translate spiritual urgency.
So, for example, like Buddha has two great disciples. Well, of course, Buddha has many, many disciples, but two of them are like so great. And of course, it's Sariputta, Shariputta, and Mahabodhisattva. These two are most greatest Buddha's disciples. And but unfortunately, these two passed away before Buddha passed out, died. That's why they didn't become Buddha's successor. So, anyway, so this Shariputra and Mahabodhisattva, when they are still young boys, you know, when they are still young boys, of course they are very sensitive young boys. But at the same, just they are young boys, that's why still they are having a fun time. Then, like now, in everywhere we have festivals, you know, and of course, ancient India also they have festivals. You know? Then, festival night, of course, many music and food or dancing, like that, you know. But then, if like ordinary boys, then they have just having fun, you know. But of course, this Shariputra and Mahamudana, of course, they are not ordinary people. Then, for some reason, they can clearly see. Okay, now just imagine, you know, many people are dancing, many noisy music is going on, and of course, many beautiful summer night, and it's maybe having a good time. But this young boy, two young boys, felt like a hole. 100 years later from now, nobody is alive, you know? Of course now, of course many beautiful men, beautiful women, young, just they are having good time music like that. But just 100 years, even just 100 years is not so long time, but even 100 years, nobody would survive. You know. Of course, we can think like that theoretically, you know? Of course, because human average year, you know, is a certain size. Of course, from ancient time of India, of course, now 80 years or something like that, but of course, ancient India very, very short. You know? That's why 100 years, of course, nobody would survive. We can think theoretically like that. But point is, these two young boys, not they thought just theoretically, but they really felt like that. So, I had the same feeling when I was so that's why I couldn't enjoy my evening, my young time, you know. Anyway, so then, these two young boys couldn't enjoy anymore just dancing, just music, such kind of lifestyle anymore. They felt like such spiritual urgency, not some beggar. Then they stopped just ordinary life. Then, of course, they are still young boys. They didn't know anything about Dharma. They didn't know anything about such a how to practice, you know. So, but they felt strong spiritual urgency and they just couldn't continue just ordinary boys' life, you know, which is full of just fun. Then they started to look for something, fit for something. Then they promised each other, if you find a good teacher, please let me know, you know? Something like that. Then they started to search for a good teacher. Then finally they met, not Buddha himself, but they met one of the Buddha's disciples, and one of the Buddha's disciples is called, his name is Asaji. Then this venerable Asaji was like a begging food, you know, with his kind of box. Then this young boy saw that this venerable Asaji's begging. But of course this Asaji was full of, you know, aura like that, you know. So they immediately noticed for this monk as something. Then they asked, who is your teacher? What kind of teaching was like that, you know. Then finally they introduced the Buddha himself, you know. Then immediately they became disciples like that, you know. But my point is, they started their own spiritual quest when they are young boys, and when they felt such a spiritual urgency. And this spiritual urgency is, they clearly saw nobody will survive 100 years. This is the truth. You know, not fantasy. So true. You know. Then they wonder, then if so, why people are still having just a fun time, you know? Of course, everyone knows, but nobody does anything. But some people, like this young boy, this spiritual urgency is too strong. That's why they couldn't continue their ordinary boy's life. Just go to school and start working and having a family or like that. So, then, any Buddhist teacher is talking, if we have such a spiritual urgency, if we feel such a spiritual urgency, then intelligence doesn't make any difference, you know. Even we are good at school, or even we are not good at school, doesn't make any sense, you know? Because so this spiritual urgency is just pushing us. Then like a teacher like doing this instead, like, okay, just imagine tonight we might die, or tomorrow we might die, you know. Of course this is not fantasy, can be, you know, because maybe traffic accident or anything happens, you know, suddenly. Earthquake might come, or tsunami might come. So that's why, okay, now I'm still living, I still have a healthy body and mind. Then we really practice just right now, then 100% sure we can get enlightenment. That's kind of thing. So, and he said, even we don't have enough intelligence, but if we have such a spiritual urgency, then we practice much, much better than so-called ordinary intelligent people who don't feel so much spiritual urgency. So, always, all the time teach Buddhist teachers talking about this spiritual urgency. Like that, you know. So then, if we look at today's world, today's people don't think like that, you know. So, and this is a difficult, the difficult point for us. For people who are living today's world, because as I explained, traditionally people felt such a spiritual urgency. Then, okay, let's practice, let's study, and let's do meditation like that. Everybody studied Buddha, Mahamogadana. And any great teachers started their practice like that, you know? Like maybe you know Patil Rinpoche is famous. Patil Rinpoche has tons of episodes, you know? But like you know, like New Year's, you know? Tibetan New Year is a huge Losa. Then, of course, as we say, Akemashite omedetou gozaimasu, or Happy New Year, you know. So, okay. Oh, Happy New Year, you know. Of course, Tibetan people also say the same thing in Tibetan, Happy New Year. You know? But, Patrick Rinpoche always, he's crying, you know, on New Year's Day. Then people ask, why, Patrick, why are you crying? Today is a very, you know, a wonderful day because it's New Year, you know. And Patrick just said, again, New Year came, you know. So it means now, again, we are more close to the end of our life, you know. So then, not only like that, we welcome New Year again without enlightenment. So now New Year January 1st, you know, but again most of us are still not enlightened, and it means we already we are losing time. Something. That's why I cannot stop crying. Something. So this is an episode of Patrick. But so always great teachers, they felt how short our life is, and that's why we really have to use this short life. And nobody knows how short, you know, how short, how long. And everybody, usually everybody thinks this might be long. Statistics says, okay, Japanese men usually live 80 years, so maybe I might have still 30 years. Of course, this kind of calculation doesn't work, you know. Nobody knows. So, great teacher always felt how short our life is and how uncertain our life is. Anything might happen. So, and as we see, if we check the newspaper like that, so many people are dying when they are still young, because of cancer, because of traffic accident, or suicide, that nobody knows. And so, then, how short, how uncertain we feel. Then we feel spiritual urgency and we start practicing. You know? Like last week I talked about taking refuge. You know? And taking refuge means really going into the like a refugee camp. Which was set up by United Nations, like that. And why we are going to refugee camp? Because it's dangerous. Because it's dangerous, that's why we are seeking for safe place, you know. Then we finally reach refugee camp. You know. Same, you know. Because why we have to take refuge in Buddha Dharma Sangha? Because it's dangerous right now, you know. And Buddha Dharma Sangha is only safe place. That's why to escape from this danger, we are looking for safe place. And this safe place is Buddha Dharma Sangha. This is a fundamental reason why we have to take refuge. So, it means before we take refuge in Dharma, Buddha Dharma Sangha, we really have to see, or we have really have to feel now it's a very dangerous situation. This is important. So, this dangerous means, of course, our life is very short, our life is uncertain, like that. So, it means, of course, impermanence. So when we feel impermanence, short, how uncertain, and how dangerous, then we feel strongly spiritual urgency. Then we really trying to find refugee camp. Then this refugee camp is Buddha Dharma Sangha. So, always Buddhist practice, great master, they have been practicing Buddha Dharma with such kind of motivation. So this is an authentic way. But now, why people find it's very difficult to practice Buddha Dharma? And as we see, you know, just any tradition, we used to have more enlightened people, you know, or we used to have more great teachers. It's obvious, you know. Like even 20th century, there are many great teachers in Zen tradition, and in Theravada tradition, and in Tibetan tradition, you know. And how about now? Well, of course, still now, many enlightened teachers. But if we compare before, of course, nobody can deny like less enlightened teachers in any traditions. And why? I think it's just a matter of spiritual urgency. Because now it's very difficult to feel spiritual urgency. That's why not so many people practice Dharma seriously. Then as a result, if these people who are practicing are becoming less, and of course, teachers, enlightened teachers, are becoming less and less. So, why? Because I think this is like a trick of this today's world. And last week we have been discussing about this world. Like last week, we talk about like a consumer society. we talk about small desire and contentment. These things are very important to become, to adapt to. But of course, as we discussed, such a small desire, shoyoku, contentment, shiseku, shoyoku, small desire, contentment, these things are completely opposite of today's consumer society. And the consumer society constantly stimulating our desire, constantly persuading people to have more desire. And how, you know, like, of course, persuading. If you get this new product, you will be happier. If you buy such a thing, you will be happier. Like, just trying to persuade people like this. So it means stimulating. So, complete opposite of small desire, and especially contentment. So, consumer society don't want people to be content, you know, of course, you know. So if we are, I'm content with my present computer. I don't need a newest. Of course, companies, they don't like it. They don't want us to be content. So, like this, today's consumer society, completely opposite, pushing people into the opposite direction of small desire and contentment. Then, especially, and this spiritual urgency, especially today's world, is really hiding something. Because, like as I said, because in historically, Buddhist authentic history, many great teachers see something and they felt spiritual urgency, then they start practicing, you know, because they saw this one. This one is of course in bias, but nowadays, this reality is, of course, hidden by something, intentionally or unconsciously. So, then as a result, it's very difficult to see this reality. Then, if we don't see this reality, we don't feel spiritual urgency. Then if we don't feel spiritual urgency, of course, we don't feel any necessity to practice like that. So it means this is completely hidden like this. That's why people don't feel spiritual urgency. Then why this is hidden? Like we have been discussing. Of course, it means like impermanence, it means how short our life is, those kind of things. Because today's modern society, we are walking in a completely opposite direction. As the statistics are saying, life expectancy is of course becoming longer and longer and longer and longer and longer, you know? Especially Japan, you know? Especially Japanese women, they have a longest life expectancy, you know? And the men are third or fourth, you know? Anyway, one of the longest, still men. Women are 85 or something like that. 85, average, you know, average 85, it means so many 80 or 90s women, you know, like that. And men are 80 something, you know? So it means, you know, so many 80 something men, you know? Like that. So, of course, because we improved hygiene, yeah. And we improve nutritious situation. And of course it's good, because now, still, of course, many poor countries, people just dying because of starvation, but the developed country, not anymore. But then, of course, in modern world, especially developed country, we just concentrated on, we have been concentrating on just improving these circumstances. So, as a result, we got longer life expectancy or like that. Then, medical, we have a much better medical situation. Yeah. And we have enough food, we have clean and polluted things, you know, like that. So these things itself are of course good, but then of course always things have an opposite side, right? And then especially people in the developed country now suffering. Even though we have been improving our like circumstances, but we cannot never get eternal life. Of course, you know, eternal life. Especially if you go to America, you'll be surprised, you know. Like when I was in America, I was surprised. As we know, America is of course the most developed country, you know, and they are so rich. They have everything. But at least rich people. Of course, poor American people, they don't have anything. But rich American people, they have everything. But as you know, rich American people, they have so much anxiety and fear over life, and as you know, their facial expression is full of some kind of just fear or anxiety. And what are you afraid of? Of course, they are afraid of only one thing, their own death. So they get everything, but because they get everything, for them it's becoming more and more and more obvious. They can't avoid their own death. So I think if you know America, I mean, you might agree with me. I really feel American people are afraid of the death the most in the world. This is my impression. And because Asian people, in some sense, we are a little bit optimistic about this life and death stuff. But American people, they have very almost weird anxiety or fear about death. This is, I think, a fundamental things for American culture. This is my impression. So anyway, so my point is, today's world is really hiding these things. That's why in Buddhist history always people are exposed to this, then people felt spiritual urgency. But nowadays these things is hidden like this. That's why people cannot feel spiritual urgency. And that's why people cannot feel necessity to practice the Dharma. This is my impression. Then, today's world, we are really trying to hide or we are trying to solve this problem just by science, just by money, or like that. Even though, of course, we can never solve this by just money or science, because we can never get eternal life by science or money. We can get only longer life, you know, longer life, only 10 years longer or 20 years longer than before, you know, but we can never get eternal life. But people in the developed country, we don't think like that. We still try to get still longer life by science, by money, like that. Then we never admit that we can never get eternal life like that. But people like in India, especially poor Indian people, they know life is completely short, you know, and they don't have anything. They don't have money, or they don't have science, you know. So they have to accept this fact, you know. So that's why they know spiritual urgency, you know. But then, this week we got an interesting mail from Momoko-san, and she's talking about, like, even in India, as you know, if we go to Varanasi, you know, and Varanasi near Ganga, Ganges River, you know, and people over there, Indian people are cremating their dead body at the Varanasi Ghat. Then, when we see, you know, our beloved father, mother, grandma, grandpa just died, and now we are cremating their dead body. You know, of course, everyone felt so such a spiritual urgency, so strongly, keenly. And then, I may become like that one day, and that's for sure. From today, I will practice. I will practice. Of course, India has such a long spiritual tradition. No? And they have tons of way of practicing. And then people feel, oh, I have things from now. But unfortunately, it doesn't last for many long time, you know. Then, only, yeah, 1 week, you know. And little by little, forget it. And again, dancing and music and, you know, Bollywood movies, you know, and, okay, let's have fun, you know. And then, okay. So, I watch from my Japanese Buddhist priest experience, you know. When I was in Kyoto, I was doing exactly like a Japanese Buddhist practice, a priest. And someone died. And then, of course, we have funeral service, you know. And most people felt, oh, my father just died, my mom that just passed away. And people are so shocked, you know. And then we go to the cremation place, you know. Well, of course, it's not like a Ganges River. It's a really modern cremation place, you know. But, just hush. Then, in Japanese Buddhist belief, dead person, they don't go to another life immediately. Like 49 days, they are just 感じかな。なんか、非常にティベタンの人生です。バルト。うん。So, like, this life and next life, between this life and next life, 49 days. Time for like that, we're still just floating.
Through some sections, every 7 days they go through something like, I heard, you know, during these 49 days, the seventh day, each seventh day you have some kind of puja.
Yes. To go through the for the next night. So, of course, Tibetan lamas, they do puja. And Japanese priests also we do puja. So we visit their house, you know. And their house, usually they have very beautiful altar. And lots of food. And every 7 days we visit and we chant some art sutra or like that. And usually we give dhamma talk, you know. Oh, life is my father. Then of course the people feel, yes, my father was so genki, you know, alive, but he just suddenly passed away, and now just so obvious, you know, because then, yes, life is so impermanent, yes, we have to practice, then everybody agreed with you, but it lasts only just 49 days. Then again they are coming back. Then usually Japanese Buddhist puja after 90 days usually we put ash into the grave. Then 1 year later we have a 1 year anniversary ceremony, Isshuki. But Isshuki, usually from my experience, people already forgetting about their beloved father or mother, you know, my father, photos, you know? Yes, yeah. Like already photos, you know? And of course, but already, you know, they already lost some kind of vivid memory. You know? And my mother is already such a photograph. And Kaiyo is a Dharma name. You know, usually each person is given Dharma name, Kaiyo. You know, such and such a Koji, such a Daishi, or such a Daishi. Oh, my mother is already it's called Oihai. You know? So, and this is my father. This is my mother, you know, like that. You know. Then people just forget everything, you know. Then just doing ordinary daily life, you know. So, because of course, German priest, maybe our responsible, is for it, you know, because I really felt, you know, after funeral and when these 49 days, you know, I think all these people will become very, you know, urgent, very strong, passionate, like that. I'm expecting, you know, but they don't, you know, they don't become like that, you know. You know, 1 year later, they forget, you know. Then, again, just ordinary life, you know. After that, 1 year, 2 years, like that, every 5 years, you know, we have some ceremony, you know, some degree of that already. So, and the memory of dead people just becoming weak and weak and weak and weak. So, nothing changed. So, it's amazing because, of course, now, constantly people are dying day by day, and even now, right now, you know, of course many funeral services are going on, you know, everywhere, you know, and priests are chanting sutra, And priests, they are giving a Dhamma talk about exactly about impermanence, about taking refuge, that kind of thing. And, but literally nothing happens here. Literally nothing happens. It's amazing, you know. So, it's exactly that kind of aspiration. Last only just not only cremation place, not just cremation place, they tell something, but it lasts only 1 week, just 49 days. So why? Because today's world, we are really everybody trying to hide this fact. I think this is like some kind of secret consensus between like all Japanese people or American people. Of course, everybody knows this fact. You know, theoretically, we can't deny. But we don't want to see it. Then, okay, it's fine. Then this is a consensus, secret consensus. And, okay, this doesn't exist. That's it. But then once, of course, still people are dying, you know, suddenly my wife or my husband or my mom or my father all died. Then, of course, immediately this just again, like this. And people are just so shocked. But this shock, that's only 1 week. Okay. 1 year later, okay, forget. Then again, as if nothing happens. As if there's nothing like this. So, I think I really strongly feel there is some kind of secret consensus between us. Secret agreement. We didn't make any agreement, we didn't make any consensus officially, Prime Minister didn't just say anything, but this is some kind of unconscious consensus. So that's why people, even though, as I said, even though people are just dying day by day, and people felt something at the funeral times and cremation times, but forget everything, basically. And then, as a result, nothing happens. Then, these people are trying to do meditation, Of course, their purpose of meditation is very senseless, we are doing. And something just one side, and like that. So nothing works. So that's why I'm telling people, let's go back to the fundamental starting point, fundamental spiritual urgency. Why? Because unless we really feel how fragile we are, we cannot go, we cannot advance one step further, because as I wrote to you, because we strongly feel how fragile we are, when we really feel it, only then we can find something which is not fragile. So this something fragile and something which is not fragile. Because only when we see how fragile we are, then we can clearly see something which is not fragile. Always this kind of structure. That's why only through this fragility, we can reach some kind of which is not pleasant. But point is, if we have a, you know, in our previous lives, if we have enough connection with the Dharma or like that, you know, then we can, we have no doubt about this something which is not fragile, you know, something is which beyond birth and death, you know. But if we don't have a karmic connection with such kind of things, then we cannot have a confidence about this something which is beyond life and death, which is not fragile. Mm-hmm. Then what we see is only something which is so fragile. I think I have been talking to many people, of course, people like this. And some people immediately understand what I'm talking about. I'm saying, you know, we are everything's impermanent. We are in mortal. Why? Because I'm not saying I'm to make people depressed, you know, to make people like desperate, you know, of course. Because I'm saying like this, only when we see our mortality, only when we see how fragile we are, only then we can see something immortal, something eternal, something which is not fragile. That's why I'm saying, please, please see how fragile we are, how impermanent everything is, you know. Like how fragile, you know. And Buddha's, or Dogen Zenji, or Patrick Rinpoche's, or Daraya, His Holiness, or all the teachers are only saying such kind of things on, with compassion, because to make people find something really eternal. But I found but most of people can't accept this. And most of people say, oh, if I say, oh, you are mortal, oh, don't, please don't say like that, you know. I don't want to hear it. And why? Because people can't have a confidence about something which is immortal. So I think because we can have some kind of confidence of something eternal, but then we can accept everything impermanence. Or mortality, such kind of things. So, but unfortunately, many people don't have enough karmic connection, karmic merit. They don't have enough karmic merit. That's why such a talks about mortality just make them depressed, make them despair. Something like that. But some people have enough karmic connection, enough karmic merit. Then, when we say everything is just impermanent, we are just mortal, then immediately some kind of spiritual urgency coming up in their mind. Then, immediately they also feel some kind, something which is beyond impermanence. That's why, yes, really, I have to practice something like that. So people like you, you know, have I think you have enough karmic connection, karmic merit. That's why you understand exactly what I'm talking about. But I find most of people can understand this. But if I say, okay, okay, let's do meditation, then you can get a peaceful life, or you can less frustration like that. I cannot stay like that, because it's me, you see. That's why I have to say, continue to say about impermanence and mortality. Because Haka, my teacher, my Zen teacher, Chama Roshi, is constantly talking about like, this kind of things. But he's so, at the same, he's very cheerful. And of course, his holiness is so, how cheerful he is, you know, as you know well. You know? And why? Because he's, they are talking about constantly death, or old age, or sickness, and mortal, and impermanence. Or, they don't sound so bad, you know. They are talking about only these very desperate things, you know. But they themselves are very cheerful person. You know? So, why? Because they know impermanence, mortality. This life is full of suffering. This life is full of, you know, unhappiness. You know, they know it. But that's why they are talking so much about this. But at the same time, they know something which is beyond this business. And they also know we can never reach this something which is beyond these things without going through this, without going through, without seeing this mortality clearly. We can never see immortality. But these teachers, they can clearly see this immortality, you know, are external, something external. That's why they themselves are very cheerful person. Very, like, Ushama Roshi was like that, and his holiness is, you know, so cheerful. Like, full of positive energy. That's why people are so attracted to him. And but he's always talking about so many bad things, you know, like that, you know. Like that. So I hope, you know, because I don't know. As I said, today's world, as I said, there is some kind of secret consensus, and we are trying to hide something. Then it cannot exist. This kind of thing exists. That's why we cannot deal with this well. Then it means if we lose connection with this, then our life, our daily life, also will become meaningless. And I think that today's culture, most of culture, for me, not at all interesting. Today's music, movies, literature, these things, arts. For me, to be honest, not so interesting. Why? It's so. They are just superficial, you know, superficial and boring, you know, like that. And recently I found something absolutely lacking. And why? I think these artists, musicians, novelists, or architects, or these artists, their life, in their life, already they lost contact with these things. And their world view, you know, their view is already very limited and very superficial. That's why what they make, like music or movies or any literatures, they are also very superficial. And No se dice así.
But just,
you know, 30 years ago, or more than that, you know, we used to have more interesting music, more interesting movies, more interesting literature. Really? You know. So, why? Because artists used to have a strong connection with these kind of things. That's why their music, their literature, their movies are also deep, quite deeper than today's one. And like that. I think this is a big problem for today's culture, today's society, and today's people. So that's why, and what I am afraid the most is, okay, today's world is like this. Then, when today's people talk about spirituality, you know, when they talk about meditation, you know, of course, they have a very quite wrong idea about spirituality, communication, practice. So, it's time to do meditation. So, okay. Then, as for meditation, the purpose of meditation is really analyzing ourselves. Analyzing ourselves, which is so fragile, which is so mortal, which is so limited. Only then, by analyzing, by or observing them, we trying to reach something which is beyond 500, which is beyond the mortality, which is immortal, something like that. So, then meditation, now we are going to do anapana meditation. We are using breath. Then we are trying to see our mind, our body, you know, and how impermanent, how fragile, you know. But when we see these things, so this point which we are seeing these things, this point is actually beyond these things. So meditation is a first step to reach this one, which is beyond life and death, beyond life and death. So please are using breath. Please go toward this immortality. Even if you cannot realize this immortality completely, but you can feel you can have a sip of a taste of this immortality. So, I'm not talking about such a extremely difficult point, but just, you know, when you are aware of breathing out. Of course, still, your mind is still going on, you know, and the feeling is still going on, and your body sensation is still going on. But at the same time, when you are aware of these things, you are, in some sense, not complete. You are free of these deeper things. This is just one taste. But you know exactly, you will know exactly how to go beyond, how to escape from all these mortal things. So, because when we are completely aware of breathing in, breathing out, then still many things are going on. But many things are going on, but when we are aware of it, we are, in some sense, we are free from this They will go in which direction we should go. Because usually we are completely driven by many thinking, many thoughts, many feeling like that. And usually completely like that. We don't know anything about what is going on, you know. Just leave everything like this, then just concentrate on your breath. This is a... Okay, let's